You're listening to Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we'll meet a singing spaceman, Canadian astronaut and viral video sensation Chris Hadfield, who's visiting Wisconsin today.
First, we're taking a look at where our food comes from. Our next guest is a fourth-generation Nebraskan whose grandfather worked in slaughterhouses in Omaha during the Depression. He dug deep into the United States meat industry to find the human cost of cheap meat in his latest book.
Since the Great Recession, demand for Spam has soared in the U.S., which led to a speed-up of the plants that produce it, run by Hormel Foods. In 2002, the production line processed 900 hogs per hour. 5 years later, that number had soared to over 1,300.
Ted Genoways is with us. He's the author of The Chain, Farm Factory, and The Fate of Our Food. He's also a contributing editor at Mother Jones and editor at large for On Earth. Ted, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks very much for having me on.
Well, you wrote a book of poems about working in pack houses, slaughterhouses during the Great Depression. So what drew you now to write about the current state of affairs in the American meat industry?
Right. Well, that book of poems was largely focused on my grandfather, and he worked, as you said, in the packing houses around the Union stockyards in Omaha during the Depression. And I had really grown up with stories of how the work that he did there and later as essentially as a sharecropper in western Nebraska had been the work that allowed my father to go to college and on to graduate school eventually and allowed me to have the life that I had. And I became interested in the question of what those workers in those situations were facing now and how the situation had changed. And I guess I had assumed that conditions were improved, but I discovered that was really not the case, that in many ways the advances that were made to improve conditions for workers after World War II have been rolled back in the last generation.
There's been a lot of examination lately about meat and its production, led by people like Michael Pollan, who've urged people to eat more greens, more vegetables. Why do we need another book now focused specifically on the pork industry?
Well, much of what the other writers have tended to focus on is exactly, as you say, the food itself. Focus on the consumer and the health impacts and what you're putting on your dinner table. My interest is much more in the workers who produce the food. On the one hand, certainly they need employment and are happy to have these jobs that are often entry-level jobs for new immigrants who are trying to get a toehold in this country and to move up the social ladder. That's always been the case with meatpacking, especially industrialized meatpacking. But I care very deeply about how those people are treated, and I think that people who are enlightened eaters, people who have become conscious of their food and where it comes from because of writers like Michael Pollan and Eric Schlosser, I think they need to expand their own focus to include the plight of the workers who make that food.
Part of this book is your look at the U.S. Department of Agriculture's pilot program to test reduced food inspection. I wonder if you could tell us about that pilot program and how Hormel fits in.
Right. So the plan is it's a little bit wonkish, so bear with me for just a second. It's a program that started about a decade ago and, as you said, was piloted by the USDA and was intended to test the effects of reduced inspection. The idea was that perhaps by using more modern methods, more scientific methods of inspection, that it would be possible to inspect fewer carcasses, to have fewer inspectors on the line, which would allow the lines to move faster and therefore increase production. Hormel Foods not only got their Fremont, Nebraska plant, which is one of their major plants, into the initial test group of five plants, they also got their main co-packer, the Quality Pork Processors plant in Austin, Minnesota, into that group, and then Hormel actually bought a third of the five plants so that by the time the program was fully implemented, all three of Hormel's main cut-and-kill operations were part of this test group. And therefore, the company becomes a perfect case study for what happens when even a single company is allowed to run its lines without any sort of cap on its speed. And unfortunately, everything that I see in the years of research that I've done indicate that it is not only bad for the workers, but it also has negative impacts on the environment, on animal welfare, and ultimately on food safety.
So much of what you're talking about is speed, and it all comes into play around the chain, which is the title of your book. Can you walk us through the chain and what that is and what it means?
Right. So in modern meatpacking plants, that speed of production is set by a chain conveyor system, and that is literally a chain that runs, sort of snakes its way through the plant and conveys the hog carcasses from one station to the next as they are fully processed. How fast that chain is set determines everything about how everything goes inside the plant that day. When there's high demand and the production line is sped up and the company tries to push the speed of the chain a little bit faster, all the workers, therefore, have to work faster. And naturally, what happens is that there's not as much time to sharpen knives. Knives dull, which means that the work gets harder as well as faster. And this tends to be the time when injuries occur, when mistakes occur. And as those speeds have been pushed for years now, this circumstance where there's this kind of heightened chance of injury is essentially the new norm within the packing plants at Hormel.
And it's not pretty, a lot of what you describe. Now, we read a statistic at the beginning citing 1,300 hogs butchered per hour at the height of this. What is that like, just in a very real factory floor kind of way?
Well, you figure that the average worker it depends on the particular task that they're performing. But if you figure that there are 1,300 hogs passing through the plant every hour, you can start to do the math on that, and you realize that every worker has a matter of seconds, just 2 or 3 seconds with each carcass. What that means is that the task that they are performing has gotten broken down to the simplest single movement that is repeated thousands of times per shift. So at the very least, when the plant is running smoothly and everything is going well, you have workers that are performing repetitive tasks that, of course, lead to all sorts of repetitive stress injuries like carpal tunnel syndrome, tennis elbow, problems with shoulders and backs. But when the plant gets pushed to this absolute peak, what it means is that a moment's inattention, a moment's error, is enough that someone can suffer a serious injury. And anyone you talk to in the plant, if they haven't been injured themselves, they've seen someone who has suffered an amputation of a finger, a serious cut or laceration on their arms. There are more severe stories of people who have had clothing caught in the conveyor system and actually been pulled into machinery. It is a situation where a simple lapse in attention, a simple moment of distraction, can lead to a life-threatening situation.
And for the animals themselves, what does it mean for butchering practices?
Well, if you figure that what the plant is doing is constantly focusing on increased speed, what that means is that the easiest way to increase speed is actually not with more workers, but with more machinery. And in order for that machinery to be working most efficiently, what you need is essentially a standard size hog that enters the plant at the loading docks. So everything in modern pork production is aimed toward having standardized sized hogs as they arrive, and that means feeding them standard feed, giving them often courses of antibiotics so that they are putting on weight and are getting muscle mass in the right proportions and in the right places. It means a lot of genetics that go into this and selective breeding. And so what you've ended up with is no longer the old system of farmers raising various kinds of hogs and bringing them to be sorted outside of the plant. Today, there's strong involvement by the meat packers in everything having to do with how farmers raise hogs, so that what arrives at their door is essentially a pork widget. It is something that is exactly the same size and dimensions and is ready to go and be processed by the modern equipment inside the plant.
And who is doing these jobs? I gather it used to be that these were union jobs that bolstered the local economy. What's changed?
Well, in the case of Hormel, there's a very bright line. There was a major strike that occurred in 1985 and into 86, where the workers in the flagship plant in Austin, Minnesota, made demands for the reinstatement of a number of benefits that had been rolled back by new corporate leadership, and wanted an improved union contract. The company made the gamble that they had enough size, enough other plants, that they could shift production to other places, and that the union had grown itself so large that the Austin workers wouldn't have the backing that they needed to sustain the strike. It took, as I said, over a year, but ultimately Hormel's leadership was correct and essentially broke the union. What that led to very quickly was the establishment of Quality Pork Processors, which I mentioned earlier, which is ostensibly a separate company, but was established within the four walls of the existing Hormel plant in Austin. The company announced that section of the plant was now not only a new company, but was a company that did not have a contract with the union. And so they would be hiring at lower wages and would be hiring non-union workers. And functionally what happened was a lot of recruitment of Hispanic workers, undocumented workers, particularly from Mexico, who came in and populated that plant and really managed to divide the workforce against itself.
We're talking to journalist Ted Genoways right now about his new book. It's called The Chain, Farm Factory and the Fate of Our Food. It's a look at how some Hormel slaughterhouses accelerated their pork processing and the consequences.
You can join the conversation. What questions do you have about the meatpacking industry? And what do you think about this speed up of production and this change in labor standards that our guest is talking about? Are you considering cutting back on meat based on stories like these? And do you work on a farm or in a factory that produces meat? Call, share your experiences at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're continuing our conversation with journalist Ted Genoways about his new book, The Chain, Farm Factory and the Fate of Our Food. It's a story of how some Hormel slaughterhouses accelerated their pork processing and the consequences.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about where our meat comes from, how these factories work? Do you work in a factory that processes meat in one way or another? And have you been thinking, should I maybe cut back on meat, given some of the stories that are coming out there? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org.
We go to our first caller now. Mike joins us from Cudahy. Hi there, Mike.
Hi. I live in South Milwaukee, which borders Cudahy, where Patrick Cudahy is located. I'm a retired physician, and I sometimes hang out with the Albanian immigrants that live here. You don't have to go to Nebraska to see this. This is going on at Patrick Cudahy. What they do there is they hire their new workers provisionally as contract workers for the first 6 months, so they get no benefits, and they really bust these people. They get as much out of them as they can. Many of them quit, and then they just hire a new crew, mainly Albanian and Mexican immigrants. I met an Albanian several months ago that nearly sliced off his hand at Patrick Cudahy. So we have it right here in Wisconsin. That's my comment.
All right. Well, thank you for the call, Mike. And Ted, what do you say to that story?
Unfortunately, it's not surprising to me, and it's true that this is not limited to Hormel foods. The thing that I think makes Hormel, as I said, the kind of case study for this is that this is one company that was allowed to increase its line speeds, and the pilot program applied to just five plants. Now the government is looking at expanding what they've implemented in those five plants to all 616 pork packing plants nationwide. And to my mind, when you say we're going to allow everyone to increase their line speed by anywhere from 20 to 50%, you're talking about increasing the sorts of conditions and the possibility of accidents like what the caller is describing.
Well, thank you for that call, Mike. And let's take another call now. Lori joins us in Viroqua. Hi, Lori.
Hi, I'm going to change my question. I would like people to consider that the corn culture that we live in out here, where it's you know, acre to acre of cornfields, that also contributes to the cheap meat policy. But this has been going on, but as regards to the speeding up of the lines, I've been a farm activist for 20 years, and this started decades ago, and particularly with the poultry processing. And I'm wondering if your guests would go a little deeper into the conditions of the the immigrant workers. You know, they're controlled by their the corporations, and then ICE will come in and keep them from organizing and keep them from getting their rights, and splitting up families. And this is part of the immigration policy that we can't talk about in our current political culture.
Thank you for the thoughts, Lori. And Ted, you had mentioned previous that the immigrant laborers coming in and working in these Hormel plants was divisive to the towns. What else do we need to know about the effects?
Well, exactly as the caller said, the principal problem, as far as I'm concerned, is that when someone is working without legal status, it dramatically decreases the likelihood that they will report any kind of problem that exists on the line. Whether that's something as simple as a knife sharpener that is not adequately sharpening their knife and is causing them small additional stress over time, or more serious injuries where they have lacerations or even amputations that they conceal from the employer, hoping not to lose their employment. The University of Iowa, a research team, did a study comparing the rate of injury reported by white meatpacking workers to the rate of injuries reported by Hispanic workers, and found that the rate of reporting was almost 50% lower among Hispanic workers. And they postulated, and I think it's evidently true, that because these workers, many of them lack the legal status, they don't report the injuries. What that means, of course, is that people are working without benefit of the sorts of protections that the union would be able to provide them if they felt that they had that full protection. They're also not able to claim the workers' compensation that they are really due. And in one of the most extreme cases that I wrote about in the book, there was a large group of people that were severely injured, came down with a neurological disorder that was the result of working in the Austin plant in Minnesota. And of the workers who reported that they had been injured, more than half were eventually called in and questioned about their immigration status and either fired or voluntarily left the company out of fear of deportation. And to me, anytime you have a workforce that is working in fear, you have a fundamentally just sort of unfair situation in terms of the treatment of the workers.
Well, thank you so much for that call. And Ted, we're about out of time. I want to thank you so much for coming on and joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
We've been speaking with Ted Genoways. He's the author of The Chain, Farm, Factory, and the Fate of Our Food. He's also a contributing editor at Mother Jones and editor at large for On Earth. We've been talking about taking a look at a new book about how some Hormel slaughterhouses accelerated their pork processing and some of the consequences.